said this? What's the story? And I'm sure if we would talk, she would have a good explanation. And since we both are honest, as far as I know by now, we're going to be able to solve the problem. But if it's not a very important friend, maybe it's just a colleague that we counted each other as friend. You know, like the very beginning level of friendship. When then I would, you know, keep my distance.
So that is to protect myself. Nice strategy.
Yes, it highly depends on the person. Because you cannot have one, you know, one size doesn't fit all. Come on. I cannot have one rule for everything.
It's also the improvement. I mean, this world has taught us different ways. Maybe in the past, everyone would have gone for a kind of fight or struggle.
Yes, yes.
But these days, people are changing. They are learning the calm ways of confrontation.
Yes.
They talk to each other, which is very nice. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that there are many difficulties rooted in this calm confrontation. I mean, as for me, I said I'm changing my strategies, but it is hard for me. It's hard to see that same person again and again. It's hard for me to be the same.
It is.
And this makes it difficult, makes it challenging. So let's devote today's episode on talking about the different ways to respond under situations. On the occasion that you know that your close friend, I don't know, a relative, a family member, has said something that would make you sad.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. We're talking about how we would respond if someone has talked bad about us. Yeah. Behind us, very importantly.
Well, the first strategy for many people is deleting that person.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends. I mean, it has different layers as for me. As I said, I have changed these days. And what I meant is this, that up today, if the same thing happens to me, first, I would not think about it. I mean, as a supervisor, sometimes I get harsh criticism, harsh messages or comments from the teachers that are complaining. Even some of them are so young. And I know that she or he doesn't mean the thing that they're saying. So I get some messages, but the first thing that these days I do, in the past, I used to just read them and then, okay, you were rude. Rude people are not in my circle. Fired. I used to be like this. But these days I changed in this way that I don't check my messages. I don't see them. I don't try to think about them. If I heard something, I will not think about it for a while. Like maybe 2 or 3 days, I will not check the message. I will not answer. I will not talk to that person. So that my mind is in a more comfortable mood, then I go for a decision.
Oh, so you're managing your emotions.
Yeah, in this way, that I postpone. I delay my answer to some time so I can just focus better.
That's very interesting, actually. I think that would work very good in work life because, well, deleting people, removing people from our life, blocking them was an easy option when we were high school students.
Yeah.
But now, well, we are in a bigger world, we're in a bigger society, and just ditching people is not an option for everyone. As you mentioned, they're your colleagues. They can be, and the worst situation can be their family.
Yeah.
Imagine one of your close family members, maybe your sister. Oh my God, like this is possible. Now that I'm saying it, I cannot imagine it because my sister is such a sweet little girl. She's younger than me, so I will always see her like this little
baby. You're a supportive person.
Yes, this is little baby of mine. So if she ever talks bad about me and then I realize, of course it's going to break me. It's going to hurt me. But I cannot remove her. We are together. Even if we're living in separate houses, we are still connected. So it can be really hard. Yeah. And I'll stick to my still same strategy of communication. Communication is the key for me. I would talk to them because these kind of relationships are important. Close friends, families. We have invested so much time, bond, and you know, emotions in it that it needs a good communication. But for example, if such thing would happen for me in work, then yes, I would use your method. That's nice.
Yeah.
I would wait for a bit better, you know, cold mind, not hot, angry mind. And then I would try to solve the problem.
Yeah, it's so important that we know that it's in our nature that we would like to react harshly.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of my nature as a human being that the moment that I see some negative ideas, I would like to attack. I would like to, I don't know, react in a harsh way. So once I realize that, okay, it's normal, but let's control it.
Yes.
Maybe during the day you see lots of people, you would like to punch them in the face, but then you control yourself.
Yes, we do. And you also mentioned a part just a few sentences ago that you'd understand them. When you mentioned that they're young and you understand them, that is also very nice. That we need to understand them. What made him or her say that? Are they mature even yet or not? What did they mean? Maybe they meant something else. And this person who's coming and telling me that person A has talked, is even this person trustable or not? What is this person looking after? Is this person, you know, trying to make our relationship get screwed or what?
Yeah, even is my close friend at that moment okay? Maybe she was so pressurized. Maybe I did something before that made her this overwhelmed that she wanted to react or say these stuff. And the other thing that, you know, Massimo, there's a lesson I learned from one of my colleagues. He's a psychologist.
Yes.
And a few years ago, those first years that I was at work, as I told you, I was so young. So once we had a kind of argument, I wouldn't have just waited for it to be over. And I would fire that person, that teacher, say, from the institute because of the reason that she or he was rude, for example. Then one day he came to me. He's my friend's husband. He's the he's a kind of, say, a friendly person who would like to change everything to a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me this, and this really changed my mindset. He said, okay, imagine that you've done this for all people around you, everyone who was rude, everyone who was not following your criteria and your rule. Then are you going to bear everything together all alone?
Mm-hmm.
And are you supporting yourself, your character, as an educated person? Or when you are doing so, you are just taking revenge? You know, sometimes, knowingly or unknowingly, we are just supporting our ego. We are not going for protecting our soul.
Yes.
This is very important, knowing that the way we react sometimes is rooted in the ego. I want to keep my position. I want to tell everyone that I have this position and I'm proud of it. So because of this, once a person is standing in front of me, I will remove them.
Oh.
So this makes it even ugly, makes it
ruder
than the thing that that person has done.
Because now you're aware of what's going deep inside you.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes people, we human beings, we are just protecting our ego. We are highlighting our ego and we forget about our soul. Our soul as a human being should look at each other as sisters, as even regarding the younger people, like our younger siblings, once we look at them in a motherhood way, in a way that I'm going to be supportive for them, I'm going to help them improve. So in this way, we would not have done those things. We would not have gone for those reactions.
That's really interesting. So you mean that we might also want to change ourselves and see the point that they want? Yeah, not to feel hurt and, you know, pull a guard, but to think outside your body.
And this is more on our side, not the side of that person who has done a mistake, be it whatever thing they have done. Here we are thinking about ourselves, the way I am behaving and the effect I am having on this problem. Am I worsening it or am I just solving it?
And it's really interesting that whatever strategy that we're using, as your friend mentioned, that we need to think about it, that what will be the outcome in me and around me in long term.
Exactly.
If I keep having this strategy for long term, will I have any people left around me? Will I be able to make a better, you know, communication with my society?
And can I handle my life?
Yes, that's very interesting.
So this is very important that once we want to think about the ways to react, we have to go inside as well. Think of ourselves after the problem. I mean, okay, now my friend has done a mistake. What if a few days later, after my reaction, I will be the bad person in this story? The way I acted makes it worse. So this is also important. The other thing is that we can just set boundaries. I mean, we can use our trust, as you said in the story of your friend, we can use our trust, this trust between us, to rebuild our relationship slowly. Maybe we get hurt at the moment, but once we talked, once we go back and we feel like, oh, I trust this person. Mm-hmm. So maybe what they have said was not like this. Maybe they didn't mean this way. So this can also help. And regarding our religion, our great prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, had said, backbiting is worse than adultery. So backbiting is one of the kinds of sins that is never accepted. But also in this situation, the person who is telling us this story is the one to be blamed.
Yes, of course, as I already mentioned.
And we are being part of it.
We need to also encounter that. What is this person looking for? What was its aim? Was it really for my sake?
Most of the times, no.
What are they up to? In simple words, what are you up to? Why are you telling me? Okay, someone said something. Someone did bad to me and I have no idea. What are you up to by telling me? Are you really trying to save me? Or did you even, you know, talk back to her? Did you defend me or not? You know, this has this topic. However, it seems very simple, yet it is very complicated. It is complicated because it has different aspects and layers to it. Was I really wrong? Why was the one who is backbiting really backbiting? Why is this listener coming and telling me? And what should I do? All these layers really make everything complicated. But I'm sure with just, you know, having some healthy boundaries and being nice toward ourselves and others, we can solve the problems.
Yeah, we are the modern citizens of the world. Yes. We say we are equipped with everything and technology and all the lessons and all the books and stuff. So we have to act like one.
Yes.
So next time that you heard something of a friend that you really love or a family member, relative, whoever, and you felt like you have to react harshly, wait for a second, think, and then decide, are you going to go for revenge? Are you going to forgive? And what strategy you, as a Muslim, are going to choose, which is not going to be the place that you regret. With all these great wishes, we end today's episode. Wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Rabbil alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Routine is the worst enemy of the human being. It makes us not being able to see the beautiful things that are surrounding us. It makes us not realizing the good things that are happening in our lives. While we continue our sometimes not exciting and so-called modern life, some people come to remind us of the treasures we have and remove the dust of oblivion of the jewels that we keep in the basement of our houses. Lena is a German girl who recently published a book called Behind the Closed Curtains, which reminds us that it is possible to dust off our traditional home elements, remodel them, and give them a modern look, and create a daring, bold, and lively interior design. What Lena has recorded in her book is only a sample of the historical background of using decorations in Iranian interior design and architecture, which is rooted in combination of Iranian culture, religion, and art. And it has evolved as time passes by. As a matter of fact, Iranian houses were a place for development of spirit and physical calmness. There is one thing in common between us and Lena. Lena and her team traveled all over Iran and took their camera behind the closed curtains of Iranian houses. They shot photos and recorded lifestyles, decorations, and designs that are somehow modern, but have roots in our history. Something that was not possible a couple of hundred years ago, but Lena wants to make sure she produces something that can be used as a reference for future generations. Something that shows where and how some Iranians live in the 21st century.
I was a student of Middle Eastern Studies politics back in Germany, and was learning some Farsi, the Farsi of the books. And I wanted to learn the proper Farsi of the streets and really get to know the country itself. Traveling in Iran, I understood that, okay, there is something in Iran we don't have that way so much. We also have it in Europe, but not in that way, which is handicrafts. So what I understood is like, okay, handicrafts, that's something everyone can relate to because it is interior design, it is decoration. Everyone has a house you have to decorate. So that's where I started. I thought, okay, also in Iran, there will be people who decorate their house and decorate them in a nice way, even if they're probably not interior designers. Mm-hmm.
What makes Iranian decorative elements more special is that they're timeless. You always find some shining aspects in them, something to fall in love with.
I think it's really cool when you're mixing something from old and bringing it into the modernity. So this is, for example, what Murtaza did here with these henna stones, which are traditionally used to paint or you place the feet on it the night before you're getting married, and then you got the henna painted on the feet. So this was the original use, but what Murtaza did, he copied them and use them as basically the feet for a coffee table. It is used outside of the religious context. It's decoration. And I think it is really a beautiful and impressive piece, especially, of course, with all the feathers in this pink, fleshy color, contrasting to the white of the house. In Iranian culture, I mean, there is the flower as a topic is really important. So what we see here is like a lale, actually it's a light, which means also in Persian the flower. And here I think it's really nice the shape you find it throughout Iran. These either candles or nowadays also they work with electricity. But it's a soft shape, so again, it's a curve like in Iranian architecture you find a lot.
Amir Hussein is an Iranian artist inspired by his roots. What is more felt at his house is a daring innovation that definitely comes from a character full of taste and art. What he does is to introduce another usage for the elements of Persian architecture and art, and thus let us see beyond the ordinary and normal elements of our life. A center yard with a pond in the middle, which is surrounded by rooms with different usages during different seasons of the year. At the first glance, you think this is a typical Iranian traditional house. But for sure, it is nothing like my grandparents' house. From what I remember, many decorative and architectural elements are the same, but they're being used very differently. And this creativity is certainly part of the beauty of this house. Decorating your house is definitely not a piece of cake, especially when you're looking for some very unique items that are infused with Persian culture and our traditions. But remember that there's an artist inside of every one of us. An artist that knows what is beautiful and what is not. An artist that knows how to put things together. But we don't necessarily have the creativity to make these decorative items. And for that reason, people in places like here made our lives easy. You just need to come here and see all these beautiful items. Pick what you love. Make sure that it goes good with your other stuff. And make sure that it fits your personality. Stores like this are the results of a recently started movement by some young Iranians who renovate old houses and decorate them with antique-like and traditional decorative items. I'm very inspired by all these amazing stuff and looking forward to use them to decorate my own house sometime soon.
I should say this is the happiest day of my life because I have published a book on interior design in Iran. And this is the final day, the book presentation. I feel super happy. I am super exhausted too, because it has been hard work. I've gone through a lot of ups and downs in the last 8 months, but I feel proud to now say, okay, I published a book, this is the book, and I'm a writer. And I've done something for Iran, a country I really love, and I started with the purpose to show a different Iran to the world, and I think I achieved it.
And Iran is a mysterious land. Every corner of it and every aspect of it is a book with thousands of pages, with beautiful images and amazing stories. Shahriyar Azimi for Iran.
Allah's love has no limits. Allah's love has no boundaries. For every raindrop that falls, for every ray of sunshine, for everything is under His control. You cannot see Allah, you cannot touch Allah, but you can feel Allah. He is there in every tear that falls, in every smile that shows. Allah is all around us. I am whatever I may be, but Allah has already planned my destiny.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Good morning. We're welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Shaykh Hussain Latifi is back with us. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
How was your Hajj pilgrimage?
Alhamdulillah. I remembered you.
Lucky you, man. Yeah. Thank you. I hope that you keep us in your du'as over there.
I did.
And may Allah accept us. And Sister Zainab, assalamu alaikum to you too.
Alaykum salam, brother.
What about you? Have you ever been to Mecca?
I have not been to Mecca.
Okay, Mina, me too. Okay, inshallah, one day. That's right. So that's a wish for everyone to be in Mecca, house of Allah, and pay visit over there, inshallah. Okay. Despite decades of severe international sanctions, Iran has made significant homegrown advancements in key fields, with women, of course, playing in the pivotal role. And Iran's achievements under sanctions and the role of Muslim women is a topic for today's discussion. All right. So I think no country was under sanctions more than Iran throughout the history of the world, okay? So for more than 45 years, we are under severe sanctions and the harshest sanctions from the Western world. But we have so many achievements in various fields. So let's go one by one. Sister Zainab, give us some numbers and statistics regarding different fields.
Okay, well, let's just see. I'll start just with a general stat, which is actually on, which I found interesting, number of university students since the Islamic Revolution. So it's increased tenfold since 1979. Okay. So I thought, well, that's
all right.
So I'm not going to go into all the different sorts of sanctions that there have been, because there's a big list. But what the people tend to say is that there were the less severe sanctions, if you can call it that, up until 2006. Then after 2006, it's a change into the really severe sanctions. But what's interesting is that they were trying to obviously, impact the, for example, the gasoline production in Iran. But now, in the last 10 years, not only is Iran self-sufficient, it's also a gasoline exporter.
Yes.
So it's things like this. And obviously, Iran has also joined other sort of global groupings, such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization,
yes,
BRICS. Has bilateral relationships with China and Russia. So all these things are really important.
So
So should also sort of mention some of the things that have happened in the field of what the women have contributed, some of the progress.
Shall we get back to that for the women roles?
We'll do
okay.
That in a moment.
So in terms of the universities, you know, more than 60% of the entrants of the university are ladies now. So once in Iran, as I could vividly remember, a kid has to travel from south of Iran to the north of Iran to get the university, okay? Now, in every province of Iran, there is a good university with good professors. Sometimes the students, has to migrate from Tehran to the other cities in order to pursue knowledge, a specific field of study over there. For instance, the faculty of the natural sciences of Gorgan, you know, in the Golestan province, you know, our northern part of Iran, which is the verdant green part of Iran, has the best universities over there. Mm-hmm. Even some of the faculty members of the universities are coming from east of Asia, Malaysia or something like that, okay, to be employed over there. So Shiraz, Isfahan, you know, even Sistan, Balochistan, okay, well, you know, they have good universities. Qom, you know, in terms of the theology and the religious science, has the best universities, faculties all across Iran. So now even knowledge inside Iran is not limited to Tehran, the capital, as used to be at the Taghut time, okay? So everybody has to migrate to Tehran in order to pursue knowledge. The knowledge is spread everywhere. Sheikh Hussein, so what about other achievements in various fields? Just name.
Well, actually, one thing that attracted my focus last night when I was going through some of the data, there are two books published in this. It is called The 40-Year Climb, Saudi Chelsea, okay?
Oh, by Mr. Raji. Okay. Mr. Raji, the Sayyid, that's right.
And all of the statistics are taken from foreigners, like internationally authoritative sources, not Iranians gloating and boosting out themselves. And these two books are very good because this is a counter mean in order to respond to the kind of propaganda that is going on against Iranians. You know, we talked about the hybrid war in another episode. They sanction you and they blame you for the problems that are created by sanctions that they have created. Okay. There's this book by Richard Nephew, The Art of Sanctions. Uh-huh. In a very diplomatic and nice language, he says basically how they can bring a nation into its knees by sanctions. How sanctions are tools in order to suppress a nation, to, in a way, they said crippling sanctions, right?
Okay.
To cripple a nation, yes. Especially the people,
yes.
To change the decision-making process of the politicians in that right. area.
So that they protest against their own
yes.
system. That's
so
right.
In okay. under all of these pressures that started from the moment that Imam Khomeini started the revolution, one statistic that, as I said, attracted my attention was this, that, you know, the population of Iran has somehow tripled. Because at the beginning of the revolution, Iran was 35
yes.
million.
Yeah.
And now we are close to 90 million.
Yeah.
Okay? So almost tripled. Population has tripled, but GDP has been, GDP per capita
yes.
has been grown four times.
All right.
You know? So it shows that the growth of the population, that not only it did not affect negatively, but also in a way that Iranian with proper management, because something that they want to indoctrinate people of the East is that you cannot manage yourself. You cannot help without our help. Okay? You cannot do stuff without the Western management. Mm-hmm. But Iranians with their revolution showed it not only without your involvement, mm-hmm. under your sanctions, under all the efforts they made on international level to isolate Iran.
All right.
And politically. Yeah. They tried all the all the means that they had to isolate Iran. But now you see people in capitals of the West, they chant Mark Bar Israel in Farsi, isn't it?
All right.
So they because the message that Iran had, the revolution of Iran, was a message that was in line with the humanity.
All right.
We do not accept injustice. We do not accept oppression. As the Imam said, no East, no West, true independence of the country. So this is politically now, as the sister said, they try to isolate Iran in different ways, but then there are different international bodies that Iran is an active part in. And they know, for example, in the Middle East, they cannot have anything, they cannot do anything without the participation or cooperation with Iran.
All right.
Despite the thing that they want to say, no, Iran is insignificant. No, Iran has a role, and you cannot just overlook its role in the region.
All right.
And global level.
That's right. So in terms of the sport...
Oh, the medals.
Yeah, the medals. You know, we are happy with our volleyball team, wrestling team, okay? So we topped first, higher than the U.S. Mm. and so many other countries, okay?
In terms of the filmmaking industry, I forgot to say
right.
that Iran is the only Muslim nation that has a full circle of filmmaking industry.
Okay.
Like the productions without the help of the other, like for
other
example,
language.
You have Yusuf Nabiullah,
yes.
the series has been
Ministerials,
broadcasted on different occasions in different Muslim countries, even the in Hamas they would broadcast it for their mm-hmm. captives. Have you heard of this?
Yes. And the nanotechnology, we are the fourth in the world.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, this is really...
Laser technology
also. Yeah, laser technology. When we are talking about the sanctions, you know, we are not talking about today or tomorrow. More than 45 years we are under sanctions, and the Stan Nano platforms, you know, says that 300 companies actively are producing nano products and exported to 50, we can't say, countries including the U.S. itself. It's among the buyers, okay, through the intermediaries. And in terms of the aerospace and biotechnology and the pharmaceuticals, you know, that's right. Again, is top.
Some of the scientific advancements there actually are the counter effect of the sanctions. Ask me how. Because sanctions would stop us, alhamdulillah, to be a milking cow. If there was really,
all right, okay.
If you could have sold oil,
yes,
you would not develop industries.
Okay.
Because you would only rely on the oil that you're producing, and you would have, like the other milking cows. Mm-hmm. That is why the leader had said in some occasions that sanctions, they have positive effects as well, because they force you to be self-sufficient. They force you not to rely on your natural resources and selling your own raw material to have added value to them yourself, and then start exporting them.
That's right.
That's the side effect. I mean, in that book, Richard Nephew misses this point, that when you sanction a nation, especially a nation that relies on natural resources like Iran, you actually are leading that nation or forcing that nation towards another path of self-sufficiency.
Yes.
And that would increase the level of industries that are based on knowledge and science.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
In terms of the vaccination and the healthcare, Iran is the first in the region.
Yeah.
Even so many other countries migrate to Iran.
And it is from the point that we would import doctors from India and Pakistan.
Yes, before Inqalab and the Philippines and the India. Most of the doctors in the neighborhoods were from India. But
I've seen hospitals in Shiraz that are specifically made for, they call it medical tourism, something
like
this.
Yeah, Meditourism, that's right. Meditourism, yes.
From Arab countries, from even other countries, they come here for different procedures, and they go out very successful.
Brain surgery, you know, is one of the most sophisticated and transplant. Professor Sami, you know, the mastermind is over there. Okay, so Sister Zainab, as a non-Iranian, how do you find these scientific developments under sanctions? So you when you were in Australia, okay. So how did you find it? Did you hear anything about Iran being, for example, developed this much or not?
Well, one of the first things that probably opened my eyes to Iran was actually reading about the resistance economy. I remember actually writing a sort of article, a sort of short paper about that for a sort of an online course I was taking. And that's and I actually, back then, I sort of developed the opinion, well, you know, that in a sense, as Shay said, sanctions would actually be good for many countries. For example, I was just thinking of neighboring Iraq, which is in a very different position, which is not self-sufficient and sadly imports a lot. But it really does sort of push a country, challenges, push countries, push people towards growth, towards development. So, yeah, so this is one of the things that really fascinated me. And obviously, so I came to Iran, so I'm here.
That's right, okay. So most of the gynecologists in Iran are now women.
Yes, that's
And this
thing.
Is a good news for the women, okay?
Yes, they feel safer.
Yeah, they feel safer to go to a Muslim woman, a Muslima going to a Muslim woman who's doctor in different fields, for example, sonography, mammography, or something like that, okay, done by a lady in Iran. Not only, so many ladies are doing surgery now, heart surgery, brain surgery in Iran, you know. So not only in Iran, all across the world. They're invited by the big, big universities all across the world in order to go.
They
have teaching courses.
They have positions in administration level. Mm-hmm. One of the martyrs in the 12-day war was a lady who was the district manager of the electricity of the Iran somewhere.
Yes.
And then when the news...
Tavanir.
Her martyr, then people in the West said, well, you did not know ladies can have jobs in Iran. You know, that is some level of stupidity that exists in average some of them.
Let me check out her name, Neda Rafi'i.
Yes.
Neda Rafi'i Parsa, that's right.
So this is something...
Yeah, she was a university professor. She was one of the district managers, as you said, of Shirkat Tavanir, which is the main electricity one in Iran. She was a mastermind.
This is something that you do not see in the depiction of Iran. Actually, I was tour guide for some time when I was younger. And something that I would hear from the tourist, Western European tourists, always was that this is completely against our expectation. What we see in Tehran, infrastructure and the highways and the cars and everything. Because the picture that we saw from Iran in the movies was a desert, some people living like in shabby places. And what we were astonished to see that, no, Iranians, they have subways. And it's much cleaner than the subways of New York, for example, or they have. So you see, part of this thing to create a mentality.
Yes.
And they actually, the Western media, tried so hard to keep the people of the West away from realities. For example, and it's not just with Iran, with China, with Mexico, with the nations that are not in line with Western interests. In their movies, they always have these filters of being gray and dusty, and or China... Before the social media and before the time that we see some of the infrastructure in China, we if you go to Hollywood movies, China is a place of like some rural area,
dragons and big planets. That's
so
right.
They have
and Bruce Lee.
They have these mythical depictions of other countries.
Martial arts.
For example, Iranians are good with the carpet and the cats. And so just
that. And pistachio and saffron and caviar and everything that they have in the breakfast table.
It's
that's
like
right.
a museum-like country, not good for modern industrialization. But then you go, and these tourists would say that when we came to Iran, we realized that, no, these people are making progress despite our unawareness of what is really going on underground here.
So many people from West and the region come to Iran in order to go to an institute called the Royan Institute. This Royan Institute, which was established by Jahad Danishgahi, Academy Jihad or something like that, is now among the toppest centers in the region and the world whose specialization is treatments for infertility. You know... And this is really...
And you know the impact that it has for the...
For IVF, that's right.
For the couples that are on the brink of separation, but they can restore...
Yeah, restore their family ties. That's it. What else? So this is your final remarks.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, I found a lovely, just lovely statement from the... This is Iran's deputy permanent representative to the UN this year at the UN Commission on the Status of Women. She was saying, so her name is Zahra Ershadi, she was saying Iranian women continue to drive progress despite the detrimental impact of the unilateral coercive measures. And then she sort of gave just some data, which I thought were quite nice, so that women are now 33% of sort of university faculties. They're 40% of medical science professionals, over 50% of healthcare workers, 40% of specialist doctors, 45% of the public sector workforce, and 74% of the private sector employees. And over 190 women have been appointed to managerial positions nationwide. And these are sort of, these would be quite senior posts, these managerial positions.
That's right.
And women own 32,000 businesses here in Iran. So there's... This is quite impressive.
Lots of startups, lots of business trades. That's right. That's right. Infant mortality, you know, has fallen dramatically from 100 per 1,000 to less than 10. Birth, as the recent report says, medical tourism is over there. 90% of the essential medical needs are produced domestically in Iran, okay? And you know that medication and medicine is an important part of the life that people nowadays...
It's strategically important.
Yeah, strategically important. That's right. Okay. And the COVID-19 vaccination production was the prime example of, you know, this mass-populated domestic vaccination in Iran. That's right. Thank you. Thank you much, Sheikh Hossein Latifi. I'm really proud to be an Iranian, to live in Iran, to this land. Very proud to have such a leader, such a system. And the true meaning of the independence is showing itself nowadays in every aspect of the life of the people. We are under sanctions. There is pressure over there. There's hardship. Okay. But inshallah, we'll pass this phase. Thank you much, both of you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for being with us. Please, for more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me. And I try to remember not to take anything for granted. 'Cause I know that one day, suddenly this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very important question. That question is related to one of the vices, one of the moral vices. Of course, I'm speaking of the vice of anger. As you know, anger has been reprimanded in many hadiths. In one hadith, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, anger is a smoldering ember kindled by Satan. And Imam Ali alayhi salam also said, rage is a type of madness because The one enraged feels regret later on, and if he does not feel regret, then his madness has become ingrained. So in connection with this topic, the question we want to pose today is, what is the remedy for anger, and how has Islam advised us to remedy our anger? In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from the hadith, which have been narrated from our infallibles, alayhim wassalam. In one beautiful hadith, it's been reported that the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wasallam, said, "O Ali, do not get angry. And if you get angry, then sit down and reflect upon the power of your Lord over his creation and his clemency towards them." Right? So one of the ways that we can, you know, subdue our anger is remember how powerful God is, and but how clement he is and patient he is with us. When we do this, it will suppress our anger. In continuation, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "And whenever anyone tells you condescendingly to fear Allah, expel your anger and remind yourself of your clemency." Right? So this is one of the ways we can relieve our anger and subdue it. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported as having said, "Remedy your anger with silence and your carnal desire through your reason." Right? So when we get angry, the worst thing we can do is start talking. The best thing we can do is to remain silent. And in this way, our anger will be subdued. And then at the end of this hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam, you could say he mentions a general rule, which is that carnal desires are subdued and eliminated through the use of reason. When we think about the consequences of what will happen if we, you know, fulfill, you know, try to fulfill our desires, whether that is, lust or anger, if we think about these consequences, then, and the consequences are always, you know, grave, then these carnal desires will become subdued and we can overcome them. And, of course, suppressing one's anger has been enjoined in the Holy Quran and the Hadith. In one beautiful verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following, "And those who suppress their anger and excuse the faults of others, wal qadhimina al-ghayd wal afina anin nas." And in another verse of the Holy Quran, we read, "Those who forgive when angered, wa idha ma ghadibu hum yaghfirun." Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at what Islam says regarding the subduing of anger in the light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhim wassalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program, The Key, on Iran Radio, with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
From beautiful Tehran, a heartfelt salam to each of you. You're tuned in Iran Radio, and I'm your host here to guide you through an enriching day of discovery and insight. Please settle in. What you'll hear today just might make your day brighter. We begin this hour with further radio productions. Then join us for Bridge, a brief commentary on profound supplications, hosted by Sheikh Mehdi Dardashtian. Bridge offers a brief commentary and presentation of the supplications of the Noble Book of Sahifa Sajjadiyah by Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him. Next, we open the door to Dialogue, hosted by Sayyid Shahriyar Naqvi. Dialogue is a look at the most important conversations and dialogues between Shia infallible imams with their followers, questioners, and leaders of different Islamic faith.